Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. And we do stream the program at those times at richarddugan.com. And we are also podcasting at the radio show's page of the same web address, richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes. So we're also on Facebook. We try to keep you updated and informed as to who's coming up and when they're coming up and all that good stuff. And we will also link to our guest's website. We'll give the email address here shortly. We encourage you to continue your research and investigation to higher learning. And when I say higher learning, I'm talking about the higher consciousness aspect of higher learning. And we hope that you are doing just that. I'm working on it. I did get actually a very nice vote of confidence from my mentor back in Phoenix that I talked with a couple of 3 days ago, and I'm looking forward to having her back on the program again and discussing some subjects which I think will be very interesting for you as well. And it was nice in our conversation. She apparently picked up on what she believes is the fact that, gee, it's great that you're working on yourself and you've really come a long way. And when you watch a tree grow, folks, if you're sitting there and watching it, it doesn't look like it's doing anything over the course of time. But if you are doing time-lapse photography, yeah, you see it grow. So you don't really notice your own personal growth. Other people hopefully pick up on it if you are indeed doing that. And we're here to help to facilitate that a little bit. We're going to be talking about the four keys to fulfillment and balance through some work that our guest has written, Living a Spiritual Life in a Material World. Anna Gatman is our guest. Thank you so much for joining us via Skype.
Thank you, Richard, for having me on your show.
This is, I think, going to be a very interesting conversation, especially considering the fact that I am constantly struggling with, in spite of what my mentor had to say, still struggling with this whole duality type of thing. We are living in a spiritual world where I haven't heard from my guests that often that there's duality in the spiritual world, whereas there certainly is in the material world, you know, with the haves, the have-nots, that kind of thing. Bank account is empty or it's full. Obviously, good and evil, right and wrong, light and dark. And yet in the spiritual world, things just are the way they are. And if you were out in the universe, like if you were just kind of floating through space, there is no duality out there either, because the universe is just unfolding, as the poem Desiderata would say, it's unfolding as it should. Let's start from the aspect of the spiritual life, living a spiritual life. Some might look and say, well, how is that so hard if I just cloister myself away with a bunch of other like-minded people and meditate and pray and om? I won't have to worry about the material world. It seems to me like that sounds nice on the surface, but it's not really a solution, is it?
Well, it's a solution for very few people on the planet. And it's not always an easy choice, but it's easier to be with like-minded people and be in a cave or in a cloister and just meditate. But even then, you're living in a material world. I mean, I think, you know, the new paradigm for a new world is that there is no split between the spiritual realm and the material. The material is an expression of the spiritual. And if we keep saying that the material is an expression of the spiritual, we can't at the same time say material things have no value. Here today, gone tomorrow. Yes, the specific thing might not be here tomorrow, but neither are we or the trees. But the value that it holds for us is here. And that's the spiritual part of material things. So there's no split, even in a monastery. You live in a body, you experience desire or inner peace in a body. You know you're experiencing inner peace because you sense it in your body. You still need to eat and nourish yourself. There's no separation.
And that is something also that I find interesting, too. As you say, there is no separation. If that's the case, I think as I correct me if I'm wrong, I'm certainly open to that. Just as my example of floating out in the universe somewhere away from any given planets, things just are the way they are. Some might on this planet might view, say, a comet hurtling towards Jupiter and smashing into it as chaos. But the reality on a higher level is that's just the way things are. That's the way things happen. You know, I use the example in nature here on this planet of animals. And whether or not generations ago, centuries, millennia ago, animals were living side by side, lamb with a lion and all that kind of stuff. Whereas today you have a lion being chased by a lamb. The lion catches and eats the lamb and sustains his life. And we say predator prey. And the reality is that's just life amongst the natural world. So when you say that the material world is just nothing more than a manifestation of the spiritual world, that tends to open up a whole new realm for us in terms of what we've created from the spiritual world. And of course, we look around in the material world today and we see what we've created, who's responsible for this, and ask the question, then how do we access the spiritual world to create something that is, again, obviously this is a subjective, judgmental statement. How do we change it so that it's a better place, so it's better for everybody, so that people can really thrive and on? I could continue on here, but how do we do that? Where do we start?
Yeah, well, you know, it's very complex, and so it's not for us to understand everything, right, and how we have come to where we are. And partially we've created it, and partially there's evolution that takes billions of years. So even our evolution takes time. Okay, it's not like we feel we're so enlightened that we should have already figured it out. We're actually in the process of figuring it out. And as we see devastating natural disaster, people wake up. We need the disaster in order to wake up to say, what are we doing? We need to see wars in certain parts of the planet to say, this is crazy. Why are we doing this? So there's the duality allows us to choose. And it allows us to grow, like you said. It allows us to grow and choose a synthesis that contains both the good and the evil, the material and the spiritual. So there's a necessity to it, and it's an evolution.
Okay. And and I would sit here and I would go, yeah, but I don't want to do that. I mean, you know, I want to make it simpler. I want to make it easier, you know, that kind of thing. I know that everybody's looking for the quick fix.
Yeah, but it's possible to make it easier. We don't have to go through suffering, okay? It's just that apparently we do in order to awaken. I mean, that's what it takes, such natural disasters for us to awaken. So apparently we do, but it doesn't have to be that way. Okay. And so it can be very simple. I mean, the formula is really simple. You take something spiritual, that is your intention, your most noble values, your aspirations, your goals, your dreams, your karma, your higher calling and purpose. All of these are the spiritual realm, okay? It's an expanded state. It's an expanded reality. That's the spiritual realm. You pick something from there. Let's pick an intention for the day. I'm going to find beauty in everything I see today. I'm going to invite beauty into my life today. I'm going to express beauty. I'm going to ask for beauty to reveal itself. And then I go to work and I live in my material world. And I just pay attention to everything that's beautiful. A child, a leaf at lunchtime that when I'm in the park and I look down at the grass and there's a leaf and it's just beautiful. Or just my colleague in a meeting who said something that was so beautifully put. And I make a point of telling them, you know, this was so beautifully put. So suddenly I'm taking something very complex and making it very simple. Beauty is within the spiritual realm, and I'm expressing it in my relationships, in the choices I make, in the actions I take. And you can do the same with peace, with serenity, with power, with anything. So that's one way that you can simplify it and take something from the spiritual realm and express it in your material daily living.
What is our spiritual birthright?
Our spiritual birthright. Our spiritual birthright, that comes from a conversation I had within myself and with the universe, that our spiritual birthright, sorry about that.
That's all right.
Our spiritual birthright is that we are spiritual beings that are manifesting in a material expression today, in my life, in your life, in our lifetime today. And so we each have the birthright to experience and the capacity to experience and access the same wisdom as luminaries, sages, saints. We listen to spiritual teachers as if they hold all the truth. And while it's so inspiring to be in their presence and it uplifts our spirit, but we have access to the same wisdom if we use the tools that we have access to in order to expand our own consciousness, because that wisdom exists in a larger reality. And when we go inward, we connect to that reality and we can gain the same access. We gain access to the same wisdom that spiritual teachers do. And that's our birthright. It's not like they're the experts and we just need to listen and just ask questions again and again and again.
It is very interesting how the process that you have come up with is available to us, obviously, in written form. It's also available on your website. I just happened to find, over here in the corner on the counter, I found a keychain. And there are four keys I would like to put on that keychain. I'd like to talk about those four keys to spiritual material balance. And let's maybe go through each one of those a little bit to help people to understand what it is that you are sharing with them. And of course, this is contained in section two of your book, which is entitled Living Spiritual, A Spiritual Life in a Material World. Again, the four keys to fulfillment and balance. And that's, I've even heard it put this way, as far as balance is concerned, that what we want to find, for example, they'll use the analogy of a pendulum. What we want to find is our way up to the top of the pendulum so that we're not swinging at the bottom of the pendulum or somewhere in the middle, back and forth and back and forth, but find that place up near the top where the pivot is, where we just move a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one person's form of balance. But let's talk about the four keys. What's the first one that we need to start with?
Sure. So I discovered and developed these four keys through my doctoral research. And they're universal principles. So in a sense, I just organized something or named something that I observed from my own experience and working with other people. And I realized that sages, spiritual teachers, spiritual leaders, they reside in these four keys, or they live by these four keys. They have a natural gift or genius, but it doesn't mean that we can't learn it. And the four keys allows you to do the same thing. And so the first key is expansive presence. And that's really the key to connecting with a more enlightened you. And in the book, I speak about really simple ways that you can expand your consciousness. It's not a complicated thing to do. Sometimes you need practice, but it's an easy access. Many people I've worked with just instantly just go, wow, this is unbelievable. I myself had this revelation when I was in a workshop and there was a guided meditation. And I thought, okay, it's a guided meditation like I've done many. And then I was told, this is your access to the spiritual realm. And I thought, really? It's that simple? And it is. So expansive presence is the first key. And all spiritual experiences have this expansive quality to them. And then the second key, and that's what I discovered in my research, that the minute you expand your consciousness, you become aware of information that was not available for you a second before. And it's intuitive knowledge that appears in a holistic manner. It's like, oh, wow, why didn't I think of that before? Obviously, it's just like you get the totality of what you need to do. And it feels just right. And I'm sure that you've had it and your listeners have had that experience of just like, wow, I totally know what I need to do now. So attentive listening is really the second key, so that you listen to inner wisdom or outer sounds, outer signs, I mean, that appear in your field of consciousness once you've expanded your consciousness and you listen attentively. And so then after you get the realization or the guidance, then the third key is inspired action, because you now have to align what you received from the spiritual realm in your material expression, your physical expression. So that's really the key to manifesting your dreams, your goal, your purpose, being aligned, right, mm-hmm. between your spirit and its expression. So that's the third key, inspired action. And then the fourth key is faith-filled knowing. And that's really those moments of realization that you go, the universe is communicating with me. If we say that it's a web of life, then we're all touching each other in ways that we cannot see, but we're all connected. And when you realize that, you build your faith. You build your faith that you can have an active, ongoing, co-creative relationship with the universe or God or however you want to call this unfathomable force of creation. And that's the fourth key. And that's when you begin to see synchronistic events and miracles happen, because suddenly you're aligned. You're much more aligned with this web of life that you're part of. So those are the four keys that can really help you on a daily basis make decisions, choices, in your work, in your relationships, in everything, in your self-care, whatever you choose to focus on.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that intrigues me is, especially with some of the older philosophies, as I call them, is this separation. Mm. And I was reading from one of the books I had, five book series called Communication. I believe it was Communication with the Teachings of the Masters of the Far East, and it was a five volume book set. And I remember this was by a gentleman by the name of Spalding. And they had an experience where they went into this cave where they had this spiritual experience where they met these characters from the Old Testament, from the New Testament, from the time of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And Jesus was there. And one of the interesting aspects that I found so fascinating was the fact that in the conversation they had with him, he was sad. And his sadness was over the fact that man has so deified him that he can't even get close to man anymore, because man has put him up on so high above human beings. And all he wants to do is commune with man. And then the reason I bring this up, because in the section on reclaiming your spiritual birthright, you have a chapter, and I'm going to play something very briefly here. You have a chapter that really epitomizes this. What if God was one of us?
What if God was one of us?
And there was this song that came out many years ago, and a lot of people took offense at this. But that was the whole point, at least of the Christian philosophy, of God being one of us, being among us, and communing with us. That has not changed over the years, regardless of what philosophy you happen to be a part of. And again, I know that we've anthropomorphized the creator, the divine force, the universal power, God, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is that if we're all connected, that the whole process, the whole point is communing, working together to, I don't know, to achieve or accomplish whatever it is that we set our hearts, minds, and souls to.
Yeah. You know, there's a famous statement by someone who was called Count Korozybski. And he said, the map is not the territory. And we get so attached to the map. So the map is Jesus is the doorway to the transcendence, or Moses is, or praying three times a day in a synagogue is, or meditating an hour and a half in the morning or in the evening. But it's the, we get attached to the things. Because we live in a material world, it's very hard for us to just hold the spiritual. So we get attached to the material. And so we keep forgetting that the map is not the territory itself, it's our doorway into it. And we get stuck at the map level.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It does. Absolutely. I remember working at the Christian radio station back in the 80s, early 90s, and I got to a point in my own personal growth, and I went through very pro-Catholic. I was raised Western Rite, very pro-Protestant. And then I kind of set all that aside, and I remember talking with one of the ministers or pastors who hosted one of the programs, and I said, you know, this was in conversation off the air. You know, once I find Jesus, you know, actually they were challenging me to find Jesus. And I said, well, yeah, but I says, once I find Jesus, you know, I made the statement that, you know, my search has just begun, because their attitude was, once you find Jesus, your search is over.
Yeah.
And it was just because, you know, and I was even accused, and I think that's probably the correct word, accused by my general manager as I was leaving for the first time after 15 years. I was considered to be a casualty of Christian radio because I wasn't towing the party line. I wasn't believing the things I was supposed to believe. Even during that time, I became a member of the Baha'i faith. Mm. I was there for about a year and a half. I'm just a curious guy. I'm just wanting to know where people are coming from, especially considering I had conversations with this one gal. She called the station all the time. I don't know that I'd call her a groupie necessarily, but we had some very interesting conversations. And one day we were talking about Adam and Eve. Again, I did not know where she was coming from philosophically, and I made some comments about Adam and Eve that she didn't care too much for. But I knew enough about the LDS Church and Mormonism that as soon as she became offended, I knew where she was coming from. And I immediately, of course, apologized and explained. I didn't know where you were coming from. I'm just sharing my observations about these writings. And I know that that's a real problem for us these days. We don't have a real good handle on multiculturalism. And I will take that one step further. In grade school and high school, world history, because to me that's multicultural instruction, is world history, didn't get a lot of stuff about a lot of the other, I'll call them, great civilizations down through millennia.
Yeah.
And I see that our educational system has just done us a real disservice. But you, Anna, you've had that exposure. To share with us a little bit about how you have been exposed to many different cultures, especially as you were growing up and your early years.
So it fits perfectly to what I want to say about Adam and Eve. So I grew up in Israel, a Jewish father and a Christian Protestant mother who was Swedish, who married my father and moved to Israel. And so in the Jewish faith, it goes by the mother. And so I was not considered Jewish. It's a horrible story how it became you're Jewish by the mother, because it used to be by the father, but maybe I won't go into it now, but there's a reason for it. But anyways, so I experienced both Hanukkah and Christmas. And as a child, you can imagine how hard that was, especially in a Jewish country or in a Jewish state. Mm-hmm. But as an adult, I realized that I was given, throughout my life, I was given extreme experiences so that I would know both sides, and I would be able to slowly, in different domains and areas, that I'd be able to synthesize them into a third option, a creative option that contains both of them. And for example, Adam and Eve, it's spiritual material. Adam comes from the root of the word, the same root of the word Adama, which is earth. And Chava, Eve, in Hebrew is Chava. That's the same root of the word experience, consciousness. So here we have Adam and Eve is earth and consciousness. So the spiritual material is there everywhere. And it's for us to pay attention to it so that we can live in balance.
I have to say that one of my favorite interviews, quite literally, is with rabbis. Because of the insight that they give me, even into the faith that I was born and raised into. Because it's, I mean, some of the ways in which things have been shared with me over the years. And one of the key elements as we're conversing was, obviously, Christianity tends to take some of the Old Testament, especially Leviticus, and wants to throw it in everybody's face in the present day. And I know well enough that the 613 laws in the Old Testament, according to what I understand from the New Testament and what Jesus' role was, are null and void because he came to fulfill. He brought a new law, which was love thy neighbor. But then there was another element when we would even discuss the minutiae surrounding some of these other laws that people want to institute on other people. He says that the problem in our modern day is that people have taken these laws out of context. They don't understand why the laws were instituted in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, they take them literally.
Yeah. But there's also another piece is that when you... if you meditate or you are in constant dialogue with the universe, then it adjusts and pivots all the time. It's not a set thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between people who create their own spiritual practice, because they're listening intuitively to what's the next thing that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
What's the impulse that needs to occur next versus it has to be done this way because it was created, you know, 2,000 years ago. This way, and it's not relevant to the context. It's really, I do want to say that it's worthwhile examining, because some of the old principles or teachings are relevant today. The ones who are potent with wisdom are still relevant. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to throw them all out, but we should examine each one and see, okay, what is the essence of it and what can we take with us? And what is the material expression of this principle or wisdom? And it's not relevant anymore. How can we adapt it to today?
And I would agree with you on that point, because it wouldn't make any sense for us to even, or for me to start collecting the books of the great ancient wisdom teachings from around the world, let alone have these kinds of conversations, because much of what we talk about is based in what has been written, past tense. At the same time, certainly each one of us has our own intuition, has our own internal guidance system, if you will, that is spoken about in all of these great writings. We're talking with Anna Gatman, and she is the author of Living a Spiritual Life in a Material World. We're going to continue our conversation here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And I want you to get on a roll sometimes. You don't want to end, but, you know, we do have to take those momentary breaks in programming just to make sure things are running smoothly and life is going as it should, as it were. And we're talking today, I think, a fascinating conversation about living in a spiritual life, living a spiritual life. The title of the book, Living a Spiritual Life in a Material World, Four Keys to Fulfillment and Balance. We're talking with the author, Anna Gatman. And I thank you so much, of course, for taking time to share these thoughts and ideas with us. And it sounds to me like you actually have had... as we were sharing at the end of the last segment, you have had this wonderful education, which to me, and this flies in the face of a lot of folks who don't believe in the concept of evolution, which to me epitomizes the evolutionary process that, as I like to say, that God created. I mean, isn't that what education is all about, to have our minds evolve and move forward, to think new things and come up with new ways of as we like to say, new ways of living and being and hopefully thriving?
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I had those experiences. You know, at the time they seemed random, but then I realized that there's a system to them. So I ended up working in as a fashion model for a decade in my 20s. I lived in Paris and worked all over Europe and America, and had a successful career and a gratifying material life. But something was missing, because I'm very mission-driven by nature. And so I had to find some purpose for my life. And so I left that and went to school and got a degree in education and spirituality, and got married and homeschooled my children, and was really very fulfilled emotionally, spiritually, and intellectually. And still something was nagging at me. Something was out of balance, because I loved what I had learned in Paris, which was to appreciate your baguette, because it's been done through the centuries and it's been crafted. And it's actually, it's an honor of the universe. It's an honor of human creation to craft everything, to craft the food and to give attention to it. And that everything you do with attention and dedication and hard work, because that's how you say thank you to the universe for creating you. And that's how you express and you become the hands and the feet of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so how was I going to live with this split? Because I had picked up this belief through my spiritual journey that in order to be truly spiritual, I'm going to have to give up material pleasures and live a very humble life with no material desires. And so I was just probably not spiritual enough, but I was feeling elation when I was eating a beautiful meal that was presented and that was cooked with love. I was feeling that love through the food. And so why was that not a valid thing? And so I had to find, between these extreme experiences of a spiritual life and a very material, seemingly superficial life as a fashion model, I just had to find some balance. And I found it one day in the English countryside, looking out through the window when I was staying at a friend's place. And I just looked out at nature and just had this aha moment that nature is in this perfect spiritual material balance. The colors, the trunks of the trees, the leaves, the grass, that's a material expression. But it emanates spiritual qualities as well, right? When we sit under a tree, we feel patience, we feel grandeur, we see glory. When we look at nature, we see its power. There's so many qualities that nature emanates, and suddenly I realized nature is in perfect spiritual material balance, and it is because it's living out its calling. So an oak tree, I'm actually sitting and looking at the redwood tree right now, and the redwood tree is expressing its calling. It is serving the birds that are coming on it and the squirrels, and it's providing windshield for us. So it's serving a larger ecosystem of minerals and plants and animals. And it's living out its calling to be a redwood tree. And I realized that when we humans, you and I, live our calling, we are in perfect spiritual material balance, because that's when we are connecting to our most noble values, our highest aspirations, our dreams, our goals, what we're supposed to do, our dharma in this life. And then we express it through everyone that we meet, whether it's work or our primary relationship or our parenting or our friendship, that's when we're in perfect balance.
I have to agree with you. I live in an area here in Santa Barbara. It's rural. It's mm-hmm. actually right in, if not on the border of a national forest. And we have had a flock of turkeys that used to occupy the property. We have a mama deer. The buck is around somewhere, because so far for the last four springs, she's showed up pregnant. So we know he's around. And I've seen him once, and what a magnificent set of antlers he has. And I'm sure they're even bigger today. We've had bears and foxes and squirrels. And my wife puts out feeders for the blue jays and the finches. We have these giant oak trees and a giant pine tree as well that's in our view. And there are times when I can't, as close, 7 miles up the pass, the 154. And as close as we are to that, I can hardly wait for 5 o'clock to get up that hill and get out of this small town. So I can be there. It's not a hatred for the small town. It's, I just want to be up there.
Yeah.
And
that's because nature is nature is vibrating at a very high vibration because of its alignment. And so when we spend time in nature, it aligns us as well. That's why we suddenly feel wonderful. We feel part of something larger than ourselves. We feel elation, inspiration, beauty, all of these qualities associated with spirituality, we experience them in nature. So it's a wonderful way for us to access our spiritual part. And then the job is to bring those qualities into everything that we do in the small town or in the city, in our meetings, in our parenting, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I've even, in these programs, as we're talking away about whatever subject it might be, I have always felt nature is the greatest teacher and example we could follow. I, you know, especially in conversations about the material world and how we have so many people who are, they're in the practice of hoarding. And it can be an individual, it can be a company, it can be a whole group of people. I even consider people who have huge bank accounts, and no offense to the capitalists, but to me, the larger your bank account gets, it just seems to me like you're hoarding that too. Because yeah. You're also, from a natural perspective, you're cutting off the flow. If it's just coming in and not going out,
yeah,
it's out of balance. And again, That's not to say that if you want to accumulate wealth, hey, you can do that here. I get that. But nature has always been that teacher. And I say to people who do tend to hold on to stuff and store up for, like they have this pantry, this giant pantry that maybe has enough food for, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah.
Show me what creature in nature does that.
Yeah.
As far ahead as they store is the season for the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, again, it's people hoard material things because they're not connected to the material aspect of why they're hoarding. And so, you know, if you're into shoes, well, that's a material indulgence. But if you know why you're into shoes or why you dress in a certain way, well, I dress according to what I want to express in myself because I have different parts in me. And when I want to access the fashion modeling me that I was in my 20s, I dress a certain way and I access her. And when I want to be the businesswoman or I want to be the teacher or the healer, whatever it is, or mm-hmm. the mom, I dress in a certain way. And so, but when I'm not connected to why I'm doing it, then I just want another dress, another dress, another dress. Maybe that will bring me happiness. And mm-hmm. that's not going to bring happiness. And that's what all the spiritual teachings say. But the minute you connect it to why you're doing it, suddenly you can say, yeah, I buy that dress because I like to flow and I want to connect to the flow in me. And so I'm wearing this in order to flow. Or I want to be proud that I've earned so and so much money, and that's why I'm doing it. Whatever your reason is, but when you connect to that, you're going to hoard less. And we need to hoard less because, you know, the world's gone crazy with so many possessions, and we're trying to fulfill. I think it's not about having less things. I mean, eventually you will need less, but you will need less not because you just need to stop having things, but because you see their value. And so you will have things that have value for you, and you will let go of things that don't have value for you.
Yeah.
And that's, again, the connection between. And if I can just bring this up, I mean, in my TED talk, TEDx talk, I also mentioned the iPhone because mm-hmm. it's such an immaterial icon.
Yes.
The first time that I experienced an iPhone, which was the first time I experienced a smartphone, I thought, this is magic. This is magic. We read or watch Lord of the Ring and we see Gandalf doing magic and we go, I wish our world was magical. But if you, at the touch of your finger, can get access to ideas that can transform your life, or you can swish from one app to the other, this is magic, but we don't see it. Mm-hmm. The smartphone is a material icon. But think of the creativity, the ingenuity, the innovation, the calling of tens of hundreds of people who have worked on the smartphone so that we can connect with family through chats around the world. We can read about disease if we need to read up on something. We can have our phone conversation now and the interview now because of technology. So it's not black or white. material or spiritual. There's spirituality even in the most iconic material things.
You know, and on the one hand, we could say, well, this is all because of our advancements in technology, our evolutionary processes in science. Others would say that there are those who would say that, no, we've actually had alien influences. Man should not be messing with these smartphones because this is of technology we have no business dealing with. And then there will be those who will probably believe the earth is flat and say, no, it is magic. It is real magic, just like the wizard. So all different kinds of perspectives. But by the same token, if one could actually do the greater works, the works that Jesus did, let alone the greater works, because I don't know of anybody who's turning water into wine. You know, and yet, boy, that would be an amazing thing. There's actually a passage in my metaphysical primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, where he comes across the perfume saint, and the conversation goes towards, well, wait a minute, if you're making all these perfumes, aren't you going to put the perfume manufacturers out of business? He says, no, I will let them keep their trade. I'm not doing this for the purposes of making money. I'm doing this because, I guess maybe to quote a New Testament phrase, for the glory of God, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that passage. Yeah.
And so it's really, and this corresponds with a question that I put forth every time new innovations do come along, new ideas do come along, especially in the areas of medicine. Just because we can, does that mean we should? And especially when it comes to the modifications to our food supply, modifications to our genetics, our DNA. I even was watching this one commercial where this one woman, she was walking her dog, kind of an unusual but cute looking dog. And the other woman asks, so what's the breed? And she stood there and named off 10 or 12 different types of dogs that this was a combination of. And I'm thinking, you really think that's a good idea? What's wrong with purebreds, you know?
Yeah. Can I go back just please. To a point that you said that where you don't see us turning water into wine.
Right.
But take, for example, my book, okay? It's a thin, small book.
Yeah.
That book is made of universal principles, spiritual qualities that I yielded, so to speak, like Gandalf the Grey, yielded from the universe through my mind and through my capacity to think and to organize. So it's all spiritual things that were through the evolution of the production of paper and ink and language were turned into a very material thing, which is a book, okay? So if you turn something spiritual into very material, now you read the book. When you read the book, again, it dissolves into spiritual principles, into universal principles. And so there is all the time this transformation from spiritual to material to spiritual again. We just don't pay attention to it because we've been taught that it's either material or spiritual.
Now that is a very interesting diagram, a mental diagram to process. That's excellent. I couldn't agree with you more. My book hasn't quite made it to the material phase yet, and it's been 17 years in the making, and it's not War and Peace. It's smaller than yours, but I've been procrastinating, so there you go. Let me ask you in regards to this process and these four keys, which I want to run down real quick here, the four keys to spiritual material balance are expansive presence, attentive listening, inspired action, and faith-filled knowledge. Faith-filled knowing. And by the way, interesting point. Greg Braden, in one of his books, as we were conversing, says that we're going to get to a place in our philosophies we're going to transcend from belief to knowing. We're just going to know that we know that things are the way they are. But let me ask you about what are the benefits of practicing these four keys of living a spiritual life in a material world?
If I could just say quickly that Jung, the psychiatrist Jung, was asked in 1959, just before he passed away, in an interview, you can see it on YouTube, he was asked if he believed in God when he was young. And he said that he believed in God. And then he was asked, do you believe now? And he paused for a second. And he says, now I know. And that's just to speak to your point.
Wow.
That he knows. He just knows. It's on YouTube, so you can find it.
But
let me tell you what the benefits are. I'll tell you first what you miss out, or when you're not using the four keys. You don't see the hidden spiritual value that's inherent in a lot of what you're already doing and what others are doing. So you're missing out on opportunities to feel elation, delight, passion, peace, joy, compassion, etc. You also don't value the material and seemingly mundane life as you think that it's devoid of all of that, and you're kind of waiting for that spiritual retreat, or you're waiting for church on Sunday. And you're also not living your calling, because even your calling has a spiritual essence to it, which transcends its expression. And then you can express it in your work, but also in your relationships. So there's a lot that's at stake if you don't live in spiritual material balance. And so, to the benefits that you asked me, it can change your outlook and mood within minutes. As I said, suddenly you're in this expanded state. You feel that you're part of something larger. So suddenly you don't feel alone anymore. You feel connected instead. You can make intuitive decisions with clarity and confidence, because again, you receive this intuitive guidance when you expand your consciousness and listen attentively. And as a result, you have greater impact on daily situations, because you follow through on the guidance and the insight with inspired action. And then you experience the excitement of realizing your unique calling, because you're living in this balance between the intention of your calling and its expression. And so then you just lead an overall balanced and gratifying, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual life.
Well, I know that we're all looking for that equilibrium, if you will, in our lives. And there are days when it feels very balanced and very peaceful. And then there are days when it feels way out of kilter, and you just, it's like one of those rides. You just want to get off, enough already.
Yeah.
And of course, we can't stay in bliss 100% of the time. Not in this material world anyway. The world is ever moving and changing, and there's flux and all those kinds of things. Is that correct? My fair assessment there?
Yes. I mean, the world is not static. So it's not about just experiencing joy or just inner peace or bliss, but our duty as a species on this planet is to raise the consciousness and the vibration of the planet. And we do it by changing the consciousness and the vibration of ourselves. So as we grow personally, we impact the world, and we together raise the consciousness. And that's a must, because otherwise we're just going to destroy ourselves.
We don't want that. Although there are those who are,
yeah,
we're working real hard at it. Let me tell you, it seems like they're really trying. But that's kind of up to us now to pick up the gauntlet. And by the way, I mentioned earlier about it would be so much easier if we just lived cloistered lives and prayed and meditated and ohmed and what have you and whatnot. I've even heard it said that it is those people down through the centuries who are basically the glue that is kind of holding the rest of us all together. And that if they stopped, you thought it was chaotic now, if they stopped, it would be even more so.
Well, they are the North Star, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like the mathematicians who create formulas, right? Mathematical formulas,
yeah,
are the spiritual North Star that develop the discipline of mathematics. So spiritual teachers and luminaries are the North Star, and it's their karma to only do that. But for the rest of us, It really is to integrate our spirituality into everything we do in our daily life.
Well, you know, we're certainly all trying to do that at some level, I'm sure. And again, it kind of goes back to our beginning of a conversation about how there's something within our soul, in our spirit, that whether we choose to acknowledge it and or to follow that urging, it's there deep down inside, and it wants to come out, so to speak. Yeah. It wants to express itself, and yet sometimes we get so vested in aspects of the material world that we will do anything and everything to suppress it, to numb ourselves from it. And I've used the analogy of one of the characters from the Star Trek Next Generation series that to me is a great example of our interconnectedness, our interdependence. And the character, Roddenberry probably didn't intend it this way, is the Borg. They're from all parts of the galaxy. Now, granted, you know, they were enslaved. However, set that aside for a moment, and if you take a look at the dynamic, each one is an individual. However, they're all connected wirelessly, supposedly, and they're all carrying out their own individual tasks. Each one of us, you, Anna, have your life's purpose. I have mine. And hopefully we're listening as we do, the two of us, to that voice inside that's saying, go left over here, and saying to you, go right over here. And we trust it. And it's all part of the big picture that we may never see, but we trust. And for the majority of my life, not only have I felt like I've always been in the right place at the right time, but I've always felt that my life has meaning. Because if I didn't, I could go out and rape and pillage and plunder, and it doesn't matter because my life has no meaning. But there's something inside that says it does. And that's that interconnectedness, that interdependentness that we all share.
Yeah. And the good news is that you don't need to become too spiritual or too material. You don't need to give up material pleasures in order to be spiritual. And you still need to pay rent if you're very spiritual, right? So there's an interconnectedness there as well.
Mm-hmm. There's and quite honestly, it's a universal law that I have come across, and that is that the universe demands and will extract exchange. If you receive something, then you will be asked to give. There's always that exchange, and you can do it freely and willingly, or it will be extracted, because that's a universal law. Ebb and flow, equal and opposite action and reaction.
So it's beautiful.
So you can't escape it. And I think that and that's why, especially around the holidays here in the States with Christmas, well, around the world, you know, people all get all a tizzy over, you know, the whole aspect of receiving. Oh, you didn't have to do that. And yet they're more than willing to give, but they don't want anything in return. And that's wonderful selflessness, but that's a violation of the universal principle. And that's rather simplistic as far as, you know, that example. But I think that
connects. Yeah, I mean, it also connects to that we don't think that we're worthy. We don't realize how worthy we are. And that's the birthright again. The birthright is that we are, you know, light and bigger beyond measure, right? The Marianne Williamson quote. It's like we are, the universe is amazing and nature is amazing and we are not separate. We are amazing. Our the system, the how we breathe and our heart pumps, everything. And there's, are we worthy? Is God just going to talk to Jesus or to the Buddha, or is God or the universe, this web of life, is it going to talk to me and communicate with me? And am I worthy of it? So it comes from that.
Yeah. It's quite honestly, from my perspective, it's an extraordinary process. And when we can tap into it and we can at least on some level understand it, or at least even if we don't understand it, we know and can accept it or believe that, you know, it's there for us too. It doesn't necessarily make our lives that much easier. But you talked too about, if I'm correct, I'm now mixing two interviews in my head probably. What about the aspect of, I've heard this said, that the only way to build character is through the challenges and the struggles and the strife that we go through in this world and the suffering. Is that really? I mean, if I accept my birthright, can I go through life still evolving, still growing, still maturing and living in that balance of spiritual and material without having to suffer the slings and arrows?
Well, the question is what makes us suffer, because you can go through an experience and you can suffer through it, or you can immediately see the learning in it and the growing and the stretching and the opportunity and the silver lining. And at that moment, the same event, you're not suffering through it. So it really is not. So every event can be an event of suffering. I mean, even, you know, when you see something really painful, and it just cracks you. I mean, even the Las Vegas shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so horrific. And I thought to myself, what I need to do is keep my heart open. What I need to do is keep my heart open. And part of that is to feel the pain of the waste, the loss of life. But to stay in this open heart turns it from suffering to, there's an opportunity for me in this, just watching the news, keep your heart open. If you need to cry, cry. But then I'm not suffering, I'm crying. And that opens me up to maybe do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is in your perspective. You suffer because you perceive it as suffering. And I've suffered enough in my life. So it's not that I don't suffer, but I know that when I perceive the value of it, I don't suffer from one moment to the next.
Right, right. I know, too, that, you know, we have in our lives, we have people that are close to us. We even will bring animals into our lives and we get close to them and they become like human. We treat them in many cases that way.
Yeah.
And we have, my wife and I have animals, 2 dogs and 5 cats and 5 chickens. And then, of course, all of the other wonderful natural creatures that happen to be residing around us. And I just am so amazed at their resilience when certain things happen, when traumas happen. I mean, it's been almost a year since we were evacuated from our home due to a fire that was coming towards us up on the hill where we were living. Now, this was not associated with the mudslides that happened back in January of 2018. This was in the summer of 2017. We'd been through 11 fires previous, and I swear some of those fires were even closer than this one. And we were never evacuated. But 2017... you've got to get out now. And so we packed up the dogs and the cats, didn't have the chickens at the time. And I bring this up because when we took the cats back after we were allowed to go home, it was several days, maybe a week or so, before they reacclimated. And they did not seem to be real happy with us. because of what we had done, left them somewhere foreign to them. And yet they gradually bounced back, and the dogs were kind of the same way, but it was a little faster. I mean, they were just glad to see us. So that connection was there.
Yeah.
And again, I go back to using nature as an example. Look how resilient these creatures are, how quickly they bounce back, and what we can learn from them. They don't hold grudges. They don't act out of revenge or spite or jealousy in that regard. What a great example that could be for us.
Yes, I agree with you. And look how resilient the planet is, you know, with everything that we're doing and the amount of people that are on the planet. And look how resilient we are as part of it. We go through suffering in our childhood, through horrendous experiences, and we go through so many things, and yet we're so resilient. And so it is amazing.
Yeah, it really is. And it's sometimes I am actually a little surprised at the resiliency, because my ego, my intellect and ego tend to get together going, well, I don't know why Mother Nature's doing that. She should be pissed and just be rolling over and trying to shake these fleas off.
But you see, the world, the universe, it's a universe that the principles are love, creativity, and order. Those are the principles that create the universe. And so we've been taught, you know, to be punished and angry, but actually the universe, I mean, look at our planet and us as human beings and what we're able to do. It's creativity, it's love, and it's order. These are the three principles of the universe. And so the planet is very forgiving.
Yeah. And the thing is that I know I have been in my life trying to always give people the benefit of the doubt, no matter what they've done. You know, I don't like having that vengeful, revengeful kind of energy that I know a lot of people do. Is like, oh, they did me wrong. And it's like, you know, for example, there are people who have been through horrendous divorces. And I consider my divorce to be pretty darn horrendous. It went on for a year and almost a year. And yet I have tried to maintain some kind of a friendship with my ex-wife. I mean, my God, we were together for 15 years. How can you just throw that away? Yeah. Same thing with my best friend. We grew up through grade school, high school, and college together, took a trip together back in 1980. And when we got back, there was this squabble over money. I said, I'll tell you what, let's just leave it at that because I don't want to lose the friendship. And we're still best friends to this day. And plus the fact, the damage that it does to you as an individual.
Yeah.
And
oh,
then
for
you,
sure.
Yeah. And then you end up reflecting that on people around you as well.
Yeah. It's like we connect to our anger, and sometimes our anger is really needed because it builds up the power. It builds up the fire in us to stand for something that feels not right for us, that we want to make better. But if we spend too much time in our anger, then we become as angry as the person who we thought it was unjustly angry.
And so
it really is a balance, right?
And sometimes I wonder about people who have a lot of very wide and varied health conditions and how much those health conditions have been triggered by those kinds of emotions. That there's nothing wrong with the emotion itself. It's hanging on to it for years.
Yeah.
Is that the same aspect of manifesting in the material world from the spiritual? Because to me, emotions, they seem to have been labeled as separate from our spirit, our spirituality, but somehow I think they're really genuinely connected.
Yeah, and they're a part. They really balance us, because sometimes, you know, like the Kilauea eruption in Big Island in Hawaii now, sometimes we need to take the pressure out, right? So sometimes we need to be angry for a moment, and sometimes we need to be in joy, and sometimes we need to be really quiet, and sometimes we need to be really joyful. And it balances out a system that is self-organizing and self-regulating, and our emotions are there. And then there's another thing about emotions, that we sometimes think that our emotions are the reality of what we're experiencing. And in a sense, we're just entering a zone, a field, an energetic field, a magnetic field of joy or a magnetic field of pain. And so if we enter the magnetic field or of pain because something has made us feel painful, then let it come through. But if we stay attached to the pain, then we start believing that the pain is a reality versus just a field, an energetic field that we've come upon, right? That we've touched, that serve us right now for something to release pain. So it's really important to stay in the center and just use those emotions to visit them, to visit all of them. Not to just go to the light ones and to the good ones, and not to stay stuck in the difficult ones, but to just be in all of them and come back and forth and back and forth, so that we realize we're using them, but we don't get attached to them and think that they're the reality. I'm always joyful. I'm just joyful, or I'm always depressed, always really sad.
Yeah. There was a time, and actually my ex-wife and her girlfriend convinced me of a sort to go to therapy because they thought I had a problem. So I'm open to that. So I went to 4 therapeutic sessions. And in the 4th and final session, the therapist basically said that I had character flaws. And mainly because when she asked me to name off all of my friends, the majority of them were female. Hmm. And when she said I had character flaws, I thought, no, and we're done here. And that was that.
Wow.
And it's interesting how others tend to want to label us. And one of the other things I wanted to talk about before we wrap things up, and we are getting short on time, but is that aspect of the material world, the outside world, outside of us as individuals, does want to do that. They want to put those labels on us. They were saying that I was depressed, and that's the reason why I was, why they perceived that I had anger issues, when I moved to California, living in Phoenix, I lived there for 46 years. But when I moved to California, I started having anger issues when I was driving because people were doing, and again, my judgments, stupid things. And I wish they would stop doing stupid things with their cars. And it was not until someone said to me, you do realize they do not get up in the morning saying, let's get richer, okay? It's not personal, which was both good and bad from my perspective. But the labels that we put on others, that we put on ourselves, instead of, you know what, I'm going to do my best not to get stuck in this place of sadness, anger, depression, frustration, yeah, et cetera, so that I can get back to being happy and joyful and optimistic and so forth.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that, if you can, in this context.
Well, the brain likes to categorize things and label things and create order. And so we need to work with our brain and know that that's a function, right? That's how we're able to balance ourselves and walk through the world. So we need the categorization. We need the labels. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to stand up and walk. But then we get too attached to them. So again, it becomes like, this is who you are, you're ADHD or you're depressed. Now, yeah, there is a value. For example, I had anorexic tendencies in my 20s, and it was valuable for me to go to Food Addicts Anonymous meetings and say, I'm Anna and I'm anorexic. It was really useful for me because it helped me change the pattern. And I realized that I was starving my emotions. And when I began to eat normally, suddenly the emotions would show up. But then I realized that now I need for the rest of my life to have this label that I'm anorexic. And I thought, now it's stifling me. And so I just left. And I began developing my own relationship with food in a different way. And so labels have a value. And even the 4 keys, they're there in order to, it's so difficult to speak about spiritual matters and label them. Because when I say that the first key is expansive resonance, well, and I do write about it in the book, some people feel grounding. Some people feel exaltation. People feel different things or a heart opening. Well, I had to find a term that would contain them all. And expansiveness felt like the term that would contain all of the other emotions or experiences that one feels when one is in this larger reality. And so it's very tricky, right? Here I said expansiveness, and I have someone in a workshop saying, well, I don't feel expansiveness, I feel grounding. And I say, well, it's also grounding is an expansiveness too, because you're grounding kind of into the earth and feeling that you're one with the earth. That's an expansiveness too. So the labels have a function, but they're just a map for something. They're not the territory itself. When they don't serve anymore, we should let them go.
I want to thank you so much for sharing with us and taking so much time out of your day to do just that and talk to us about your latest work, which is Living a Spiritual Life in a Material World, 4 Keys to Fulfillment and Balance. And I tell you, if you do find yourself out here on the West Coast in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio because we could go on for another hour or two talking about this.
I'd love to come again. Richard, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
And we will have you back. We really will. You've got a lot of good things up on your website as well, which is, of course, yourname.com. It's Anna Gatmon, G-A-T-M-O-N. That's ANNAGATMON.com. Where you can find out more about the book and all good things that Anna has to share with us. And I want to ask you three final questions before I let you go. The first one, who is Anna Gatmon?
Wow. Anna Gatmon is a free spirit who is willing to... who is committed to growing and learning for herself and to do good in the world and to serve this larger reality. I'm really devoted to that. I'm a devotee of the universe.
I like that. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I'm wanting people who live devoid of meaning to realize that they can find meaning right now in the phone they're using all day, in the meeting that they go to, when they're driving in their car, when they're sitting with their kid and doing homework, all the to-do list of the entire day, that they can find meaning in those specific moments with the right process. And likewise, that the people who have bought into the New Age spiritual culture, that they realize that we need the material world. Can I tell you a quick story?
Please.
Just about you. It's a quote I read from Yogananda, that he said that when business people have came to him and followed his path and his teaching, they seemed to advance much faster than people who were spiritual, who identified as being like spiritual seekers. And the reason for that is because they had practiced in the business world focus and discipline and goal setting, and they just transferred them to the spiritual realm so that they could advance faster. Whereas people who identified, oh, well, we're spiritual and we don't care about material things, they had a much harder time because they didn't have any process or any method to advance. And you really need both. The method is the material part, and then the value that you get from it is the spiritual part. So you really need both.
And I'm guessing that these business people that he spoke of, their goal was not necessarily to grow and expand their businesses as far as a goal for this process. What I'm sure they saw was in him this process of feeling more fulfilled within.
Yes, but it wasn't like they said, oh, my life before was trash. They took what they had learned, the skills, and just transferred them into the spiritual realm, into a meditation practice or a yoga practice or whatever they were doing as his students.
Yeah. I like the story, and it's fascinating to talk about these kinds of things, because I know that we all have our goals, we all have our desires. I've shared many of them on this program as far as this program is concerned, wanting to take this thing on the road, get an RV, hit the road, start interviewing people along the way who are doing the kinds of things you're doing and making a difference in their lives and the lives of the people around them to make this a better place for everybody. That's one of the goals, one of the dreams that I have. And, I know it's going to take some time, but maybe I need to do the same thing. I need to get that discipline and that program and process and start working it. I mean, I just got on Facebook a couple of months ago.
That's good.
Been doing the program for over 10 years and interviewing for almost 40, and just now getting on Facebook. We do have Twitter as well and obviously a website. And again, I thank you so much, Anna, for joining us here on the program.
Thank you again, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.